Good evening, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, we have with us down in Florida, April Oakes. And April is involved in trying to educate people about the dangers of the mercury in the vaccines and the aluminum in the vaccines and the fetal tissue in the vaccines and all the other things that are in vaccines that are being given to our children today. Do you notice, for instance, when you take a live polio virus, as we all did, that initially, of course, you got the cancer-producing virus, SV40, and then when they changed the source of the monkeys that they were growing the vaccine in, from the rhesus monkey to the green monkey, then you got all the green monkey viruses, and they're growing in you today, and some of these cytomegalic viruses can have lethal effects. So, you know, they have been using mass experiments on the American people, and indeed on the people of the entire world, and we wonder why one in six American children has either a neurodevelopmental abnormality or certainly a behavioral abnormality. We know that when children from underdeveloped countries come to America, they get sick. They develop allergies, they develop asthma, they develop obesity. Why would that be? Why, I thought we were the healthiest people in the world. Well, that is a background. April Oakes, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Stan, for having me.
Well, let's get a little bit in the background. Why don't you tell our listeners, and remember, this is a new audience. You haven't talked to them before. So why don't you tell them about how you got involved in this battle and have become so dedicated that you're working literally full-time trying to educate the American people about the danger to their children and their grandchildren.
Yes, sir. Well, unfortunately, I was a victim with my first child, Casey, who was injured by her childhood vaccinations and labeled autistic, which is one in 166 children today. And I ended up losing her. She ended up dying back in June of 1999, and since her death, I've been very clearly led to wake the world up to the cause of autism, as well as ADD, ADHD, and every other autoimmune disease out there.
All right. Well, what have you learned as you've actually been studying this? Because, you know, most people say, well, of course, I'm all in favor of vaccinations, but... You know, then they'll say, well, we think we ought to take the mercury out of the vaccines. And if we just took the mercury out of the vaccines or we gave the vaccines separately, everything would be fine. And you don't agree with that.
Unfortunately, mercury is only one of the few toxins in vaccinations. I mean, the mercury, the formaldehyde, and as you mentioned before, the aborted fetal tissue, animal RNA, DNA, and just many other toxins.
Don't forget the aluminum.
I would have known.
Don't forget the aluminum.
The aluminum, too. Oh, yeah, I have a list of ingredients. It's unbelievable, the devastating ingredients that are in these vaccinations.
And now you tell me they're talking about putting the squalene in that had such a disastrous effect on our Gulf War veterans. This has been banned by other countries, And you mentioned that they're talking about putting squalene in some of our childhood vaccines?
Right, reducing the mercury levels, they're claiming, and I've been told recently they're putting the squalene in there, which attacks the central nervous system, and they're claiming that it boosts the immune system.
Well, it may very well, but it boosts the immune system so it'll attack itself. And other countries have banned squalene because they know it's a disastrous effect. I know. Is there any way we can document whether that's actually been put in yet, you know?
We're in the process of researching it right now. It was just news to me last week.
Hold just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest here is April Oakes, and, of course, we really need to look into the background of whether they're really using the squalene, but the fact that this was such a disaster with the experimental vaccine that they gave to the Gulf, men who went to the first Gulf War, and the fact that almost half of them are severely disabled, and almost everyone that is disabled has a antibody tied to the squalene. So I think we really need to find out if they might be considering doing the same thing to the childhood vaccines, and the only reason you'd want to do that would be to hurt the children. So let's find out if it's really true or not. Well, tell us what you have really learned as you've actually gone on your crusade to educate people.
Well, just everything from really everything we've been told about the vaccination stand is simply not true. And we're told no shots, no school, no kidding, and that's not true. There's exemptions in every state to get into school without vaccines. We're told that vaccines are responsible for eradicating diseases, and when you look at the actual diseases they vaccinated us for, they were all on a decline, some 90 to 95% before the introduction of the vaccinations. So it's a big money-making business for our pharmaceutical companies based on my research and what I've learned. And the pharmaceutical companies are protected by our government, by our higher officials. Even back in 2003, we had to do two rallies in front of the Capitol for them slipping a provision in the Homeland Security bill and the BioShield bill protecting Eli Lilly, the manufacturers of the thimerosal, the mercury in vaccinations. And we were the only organization that fully funded that rally, both rallies.
Yeah, you were actually able to block that. I mean, they wanted to put that into the Homeland Security bill, hoping nobody would know it was there, and it would suddenly become the law of the land that Eli Lilly would be exempt from being sued for putting something that was so toxic you couldn't put it on the skin, and yet they sold it initially, of course, to themselves, and then they, of course, sold the right to other people to manufacture it and put it into the vaccines while Eli Lilly made the profit on it. You know, knowing full well it was too toxic to put on the skin, but we were going to inject it into our children. What sort of madness is that?
It's unbelievable. And not only that, because the pharmaceutical companies are the biggest sponsors of our media, every other commercial is a drug commercial, of course, we don't hear about the things that I'm telling you. Even Congressman Dan Burton has been holding hearings in D.C. since 1999, exposing there's been no long-term safety studies performed on vaccinations since 1929. The same people who are sitting on the pharmaceutical boards are mandating which vaccines are required for school. You know, today if a baby gets the regular vaccinations or the mandated schedule, they're receiving 45 injected vaccines by the time they're 6 months of age. Nine diseases simultaneously sometimes. And it's just an overload on their immune system. We have the
research. Hold that stuff right there, April.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is April Oakes. And April, of course, leads a group that is really trying to do something about the problem with vaccination. She's pointing out that if you have a newborn child, and, of course, you get all of the vaccines they want to give that child. Remember, they start giving them a totally unnecessary vaccine. Nobody could really, defend giving hepatitis B vaccine to every American child in the nursery. In fact, for years, why they gave them massive toxic doses of mercury, 85 times the permitted daily dose of mercury of the very, very first day of birth while the brain is in the rapidly developing growth area. And then, of course, didn't you mention they get something like 45 different vaccine shots? And of course, many of them are triple shots like DPT and MMR. Those are three different ones. How many do they get by the time they're 6 months of age?
By 6 months, 45 injected vaccines, and this is as per Dr. Ted Korn, one of our scientific advisors. He has some wonderful posters that we pass out. So in 45 injected vaccines by 6 months, and 74, I believe it is, between the ages of 4 and 6 years of age if you follow the mandated vaccination schedule.
Yeah, well, of course, they're going to tell us, but look what we've done. I mean, we've pretty well eradicated disease. We've pretty well eradicated polio. We've pretty well eradicated measles. We've pretty well eradicated pertussis. So how do you respond to that?
It's the numbers game. Epidemiological studies can be manipulated, Stan. For instance, the polio. We have one of our scientific advisors who was the oral polio campaign manager back in the 50s who has recently admitted to me that he could be wrong. All they did was they changed the diagnosis. They stopped calling it polio, and they started calling it encephalitis. So it looked like polio was going down, and encephalitis just went up. So they manipulate the numbers. Again, the charts, when you actually look at these diseases, not only are most of them not deadly, like chickenpox that are now mandating for 6 months and above. You and I know it's not a deadly disease, although they are campaigning it as a deadly disease. But they almost wait till the epidemics declined naturally, and then they introduced the vaccine to take credit. So it's we have their number. The moms who are aware, I mean, again, autism's 1 in 150, and a lot of the parents are aware that vaccinations have caused it, and we're very aggressive, you know, fighting for our children and being the voice for these voiceless angels.
Well, of course, I think that the most important thing is for people to realize what really had happened as far as the incidence of disease in America. Now, don't confuse what's going on in the United States with what's going on in other countries. But here in the United States, for instance, measles, and we have the figures, government figures. At the turn of the century, the beginning of 1900, 11,000 deaths a year, supposedly, from measles. And by the time you got around to 1966, by the time that they had a vaccine, I think the deaths were down something like to 44 a year. Now, every one of those children, certainly you feel very badly that they would die. But what about the fact that one in every six children in America today has a neurodevelopmental abnormality and or a behavioral abnormality? What about them? Where is the outcry from them? Well, the CDC says, gee, we have no idea why this is happening. We have no idea why childhood type 1 diabetes is increasing. We have no idea why childhood asthma is just exploding in America. We have no idea why childhood allergies are exploding, but you can trust us. Why, we wouldn't lie to you about anything, and you have nothing to worry about from the thimerosal in vaccines. And if you believe that they're telling you the truth, you need to get this book, Evidence of Harm by David Kirby, because you'll have an opportunity to read what the emails they were sending back and forth from the CDC were saying. What happens when the parents find out we're lying to them? I mean, these people should go to prison. They should for really criminal damage to the minds of the children. We've lost almost an entire generation of our children, and nobody in government is ever held responsible. Have you read that book yet, Evidence of Harm?
I've heard lots about it, Stan. I haven't had the opportunity to read it, but I'm very well aware of it. And Lynn Redwood with SafeLines, another large group, which primarily focuses on the mercury in vaccinations, but they are doing a great job exposing the truth about the mercury. They're, you know, that's who is behind the book, and we're all together here. We're all, you know, fighting a big fight here. The pharmaceutical companies are a big battle to conquer, although I know without question truth will prevail. We have a much powerful source on our side, and, you know, we're going to expose them for what they're doing to our babies, because like you said, they've wiped out a generation, literally. Every child today has some form of body attacking itself disease. And when you're extracting, you know, they use live mediums, of course, to make these vaccines. And like for hepatitis B, they use an African green monkey. The DPT, they use a jugular of a horse. They use aborted fetal tissue. So when you're extracting a live virus from a live monkey, you're extracting every virus that particular monkey ever had. Then you're surpassing our God-given defense mechanisms, fever, vomiting, diarrhea, and directly into the lymphatic system, you're injecting these toxins. And autoimmune is just the body not distinguishing itself from non-self, so it attacks. With autism, ADD, ADHD, it's an immediate attack to the brain. My father died from ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, from his flu shot every year. Even Montel Williams went public that his multiple sclerosis was caused by his hepatitis B vaccination. So we're talking 10,001 labels, as our treatment coordinator says, which is one disease, cellular malfunction. I mean, we're literally playing God with these vaccinations and breaking down the immune system.
Well, even recent studies have shown among nurses who were forced to take the hepatitis B vaccine, they were told that they had to do it. If you're going to work in a hospital, you have to take the vaccine. And they found, of course, analyzing those nurses, that it tripled, three times the incidence of multiple sclerosis in the nurses who took the hepatitis B vaccine. But you're not going to read that in the regular papers because, after all, you know, this is one of the great triumphs of our time. It's basically its gene. They actually take one gene off the hepatitis B and they make that into a vaccine. They gave it to us. What they don't tell you is that gene looks just like the gene that you find, or the molecule that you find, in the myelin sheath that surround our nerves. And so you get something called molecular mimicking. And basically, the body can't differentiate from the gene that you're making it allergic to and respond to, an inflammatory response to, and your own myelin that surrounds your nerve sheaths. And this is why, of course, you get so many neurological complications with hepatitis B. And they're giving it to our children in the first day of their life in the nursery. There is no possible excuse for doing that in this country where hepatitis B in newborn children is not a problem. Why are they doing that, April?
Your guess is as good as mine because hepatitis B is a bloodborne pathogen. It can only be transferred through blood transfusions, IV, you know, drug use, or sexual activity. And they're giving it to a baby within 3 hours of birth now. And so there is no reason for it at all, as far as I'm concerned. They have no long-term safety studies performed. There is no proof of immunity from any vaccination. I mean, they have no science even proven that vaccinations work, based on my research. We have the research. They have smoke screens of opinions. We're supposed to just believe them. But, you know, like I said, as parents, we're not going to just trust anymore. We now are taking our children's health in our own hands and finding out the facts, and we're literally educating them.
Now, you actually have a talk you give on vaccines, don't you?
I do. I'm focusing on the preventative end since my daughter's not here any longer, and I do presentations for whoever will listen. Educate before you vaccinate, your children, your choice, your rights, which is based on 24 years of research. And most of them are on our scientific board because we are the ones that are funding them, because they don't get any funding but from the, you know, from the parents. And it just basically, it shows all the facts that I just wish to God I would have known, because we blindly hold our children down, Stan, thinking we're doing the best thing for them, and we're totally misinformed. So I feel it's my obligation to let the world know, any parent that's interested, that you can go to school, that, you know, all the facts, the conflicts of interest, and provide the research so that they can make that informed choice, at least.
Well, why don't you just start out and tell us, if, when you were going to give your presentations, of course, I know you don't have the slides with you, but just go ahead and as if you were going to give the presentation to it.
Oh, well, that's very sweet. Well, actually, I have the written part of it in front of me because I kind of refer to it constantly. But I started off just by, you know, introducing myself as the president of TAP, the Autism Autoimmunity Project, and the founder of Casey's Quest, our Florida chapter.
Now, that's T-A-A-P, isn't it?
T-A-A-P, yeah, the extra A for autism, which I believe are the angels God's sending down to wake us up to what we're doing, because we've given man his role. I started our organization, again, in honor of my 4-year-old autistic daughter who passed away on June 13th. And then I go into the only reason I'm able to breathe today after losing the most important thing in my life is because God has made my mission in life very clear. I realized Casey was vaccine injured before she received the label of autism. I say label because we believe this is what mainstream professionals want us to call these vaccine injured children. It implies that their condition is a causeless, cureless, random happening. Autism is currently 1 in 166 children today, 1 in 68 families, which doesn't even include other vaccine-related disorders such as ADD and ADHD. And, of course, I've dedicated the rest of my life to doing whatever is necessary to help these innocent victims and to protecting healthy children and children yet to be from the autism epidemic.
And let me just point out that not only do we have the autism and the Asperger's disease and the ADD and the ADHD, we have so many of our children who have reading disabilities, and they have math disabilities, and they have speech disabilities, and they have behavioral disabilities. And you compare the average high school graduate of the United States today with the scholastically, and this has been done, and we can give you the studies on it if you want to, scholastically with graduates of other countries like Lithuania and Latvia, and we're down at the bottom. We're 15 out of 16 on so many things. You couldn't do such a bad job. You couldn't do such damage to our children unintentionally. Somebody knows exactly what they're doing. And the fact that you're not going to hear programs like this or these things being widely discussed across America simply reflects the degree of control that exists over what the American people think. Those of you who, of course, have heard me talk on Bertrand Russell, talks on page 50 of his book, The Impact of Science on Society, that by the use of diet and injections and injunctions, we'll be able to mold the minds of the children so that they'll be the type of children that the state wants them to be. And you can get those pages from us. We'll be glad to send them free of charge. Just give us a call here at 1-800-544-8927. That's Bertrand Russell on what they're doing to your children. Well, Dr. Stan, go ahead, April. Pick up the story.
Oh, thank you. Anyway, I go into the organization, of course. We're a nonprofit charity, tax-deductible donation, looking into the cause, treatment, and prevention of autism. And we do raise money for the independent research. We also offer charitable assistance to families who have injured children. We provide the treatment options for autoimmunity, and that's another thing I want to make clear. There is treatment for autistic children. I know three autistic children personally who have had the label completely removed off their name just by treating. Well, first you have to acknowledge the cause of a problem to treat a problem and fix a problem. So for the few physicians out there that are acknowledging that vaccinations are causing it, they're chelating and they're putting these children on the right supplements and the nutrients their bodies are lacking and literally reversing autism.
And what really is so tragic about that, April, is that about 2 or 3 months ago, there was a spat of articles. They were obviously coordinated because there were articles in Newsweek and Time and U.S. News and World Report all in the same week, and articles on television and programs on radio and articles in the newspaper all about autism and this terrible epidemic of autism, almost as if somebody had given the order, and all across America the controlled media was responding, but the common denominator was, don't treat your children. Why you could harm your children if you were to treat them. Certainly the authorities say that there certainly is no evidence that mercury is responsible. And think of the terrible danger of treating your child for mercury intoxication. Why, it could hit their liver or kidneys, and you wouldn't want to hit the children, would you? And the audacity of these people who harmed our children and destroyed their minds to discourage treatment. When I've heard the same story over and over again from parents that their children have gotten better with treatment, and of course conventional doctors are told over and over again, nothing can be done, and it's a lie.
It's a lie, absolutely. And again, the pharmaceutical companies, because they are the sponsors of the television, that's why we don't see any type of information on this. And of course they give financial incentives to the pediatricians as well as the schools for per vaccinated child. They get paid anywhere from $60 to $100 per vaccinated child, so they're not going to, you know, they're not going to acknowledge that the vaccines have, that you have exemptions from vaccinations. They also are given they're also given financial incentives for the drugs that they're putting these children on, like Ritalin. They're making $1,000 per child on Ritalin, which is a cocaine derivative. So literally opposed to treating and fixing the problem, they want to mask the symptoms with Band-Aids is what I call it, and they want to, you know, dumb these children down. And it's, you know, we've got to wake up. Everyone's got to wake up and start, you know, speaking for these babies and fight for them.
All right. Well, Chris, now you're out there in front of the audience, and what are you going to say next? You've outlined the program, but how do you begin to approach it?
I mean, back to the presentation.
Back to the presentation.
Yeah, back to the presentation. I go into, we need your help in supporting research leading to a reduction in the number of autism cases and hopefully put an end to this epidemic. We're not searching for answers, and we support the independent research that proves what we already know. These doctors are confirming what many parents have witnessed, and they're counting on us to fund their research. No one knows our babies better than we do, and it's time for us to be their voice. We don't have 40 or 50 years to find answers because our children are in a race against time. This epidemic is due to an immune insult, and it's impossible to have a genetic epidemic. Now, and then I go into carefully examining the practice of vaccination, how there's not any other procedure in medicine so boldly defended by parents, health departments, medical doctors, and government. There are rite of passage into adulthood. They're politically correct, and parents who do not vaccinate have been labeled irresponsible by society and are said to put others at risk. Which, let me stop there for a second, makes no sense at all to me because of these vaccines
Hold that thought right for a minute here, okay. And we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is April Oliver, and of course she is the chairman of an organization known as TAAP, T-A-A-P, and we're going to tell you right after the half-hour break how you can get in touch with her organization. But they have a number of very competent people they're working with. They're working with researchers, and you must understand, if you are a physician or a scientist and you come out against vaccines and point out their danger, you're through. As with Dr. Wakefield, who is one of the top-notch surgeons in Great Britain, he lost his license. He was fired from the hospital where he worked, and he can't even get a license here in the United States. A very competent physician and surgeon. Why can't he get a license? Because the forces that are in favor of harming our children will move heaven and earth to make an example out of anybody who really tells the truth. And, of course, the same thing has happened to Dr. Martin, who I know that you work with, and I'm sure you probably have other doctors who are trying to get the truth out there, but if you are actually practicing in medicine, they will come after you with a vengeance. Why? Well, for the very same reason that there was a program about 3 months ago, and probably if you remember reading your local magazines or weekly magazine, Time, Newsweek, U.S. News and Report, and World Report, we take all of them, and all in the very same week, they all carried articles saying, oh, there was this terrible autistic epidemic, and we had no idea it was there, but we want to assure you it has nothing to do with mercury, and the last thing you want to do if you have a child that has this terrible disease is treat it for mercury intoxication, because why, you could damage their kidneys or their liver if you were to treat them. And, of course, medical authorities will assure you that there's no justification for trying to treat these unfortunate children. And the great tragedy is many of the children have gotten better, and the earlier you can get to them, the better. And there is a coordinated effort by the people who control our media to discourage parents from getting treatment. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely something they don't acknowledge, and they don't. It's almost like they want to throw these children away once they injure them. But again, there are many physicians that are reversing autism. Our treatment coordinator, who's a naturopathic physician, Dr. Gary Tunsky, he's known as Dr. Detox, and he is he's getting results in every disease, every label that they give autoimmune diseases, just by treating at a cellular level and detoxing the organs and detoxing all the toxins and then putting in the nutrients that our body needs. I mean, he's even reversing fourth stage terminal cancer. Medicine cut burns and poisons them and radiates and chemos them and puts this mustard gas in them, he's literally reversing it. So, you know, basically treating God's way opposed to man's way. And we're all coming together, Stan. I mean, all of us are fed up. We're sick of seeing the babies suffer and, you know, these innocent victims. And we're all coming together. We're not afraid, because fear is not of God, and He is our CEO. And we're going to stand up and fight to the end in honor of them. And in the fact that we're all coming together, I really feel sorry for the pharmaceutical companies, to be honest with you.
All right, our guest is April Oaks, and I've been calling her Oliver, but April Oaks, and for season with TAAP. Well, April, go ahead with your presentation. There's an audience of people out there, and they want to know how you can possibly oppose vaccines when the entire medical profession, and certainly the Centers for Disease Control, that paragon of virtue back there in Atlanta that's done such a great job controlling the AIDS epidemic, and now, of course, wants to stop all disease by vaccinations. In fact, they're coming with a vaccine for about every imaginable disease, which is only going to compound the problem. But you pick up the story. What are you going to say to the audience?
Well, first of all, just so everyone knows, I mean, everyone, all the large government agencies, they're all tied in with the pharmaceutical companies. Our FDA is completely funded by the pharmaceutical companies. Even Bush Sr. used to be a board member of Eli Lilly, the manufacturers of the mercury and vaccinations. So, I mean, they're all tied in together, and they're making so much money. It's a big money-making business, and that's why we don't hear anything that we're talking about tonight, you know, because our media and you know, the pharmaceutical companies being their sponsors, as well as funding the medical schools that train the doctors. And that's why the doctors are so misinformed as well, because they're only getting their information from the medical schools and from the pharmaceutical companies that vaccines are the best thing since sliced bread. So that's why it's up to us to really, you know, expose the truth here. But back to the presentation, I go into, you know, natural versus artificial immunity. I mean, our bodies are designed to fight. I mean, it's like, you know, a broken arm or you cut yourself. It's, you know, the innate ability. You know, chiropractic, for instance, chiropractic believes that the body has the innate ability to heal from the inside out. So they just release the subluxation so that God can do his work. And that's why medical doctors have always called them quacks. Whereas the pharmaceutical companies teach the doctors that they have this godlike mentality and literally heal from the outside in. Take a pill for this, take a pill for that. You don't need tonsils, you don't need a gallbladder, take it out. So we've literally given man God's role, and that's really been my overall lesson from God's stand. It's been he is our master physician. He created us with everything that we need, fever, vomiting, diarrhea, and we let medical doctors teach us to suppress those defense mechanisms and then to directly into the body inject these toxins.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with April Oakes, and we're going to invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is April Oakes. We're talking about the great tragedy that we have here in the United States, and certainly we've actually seen a dramatic fall in the regular childhood diseases before the advent of the vaccines. Now, I found that very, very difficult to believe because I'm a traditionally trained physician. I actually had to get the government figures to see what had actually happened, and you could actually go to our website and pull down our newsletters I think about 2 or 3 years ago that we actually talk about the vaccines, and we give you the government statistics. And the incidence of disease, of diphtheria, and tetanus and pertussis and measles had fallen dramatically. The incidence of measles had fallen 99%. The incidence of diphtheria had fallen almost as much. The incidence of diphtheria and of tetanus and pertussis had fallen 94-95% before they ever began giving the vaccines. So you have to understand that these things were falling here in the United States because of our nutrition and other things long before they ever started the vaccines, which they say, of course, have brought these diseases under control. So, and certainly, I know April probably will not agree with me. I think that doing away with polio was a wonderful, wonderful thing, but at what expense? We infected the whole population of America with a cancer-producing virus, and the government says, oh, well, just because people are coming down with all these cancers today, and all these cancers have the virus in it, and we know that the virus produces cancer, you can't prove that that virus produced that cancer in that one individual, and that's absolutely true. You can't prove that tobacco produced cancer in any patient, and you cannot prove that beyond any shadow of a doubt, or it produced emphysema. But, of course, we all accept that to be true. So what they've done is they're simply playing games while the children are being harmed and damaged. Go ahead, April.
Yeah, back, as far as the cancer, that's another autoimmune label. And one of our researchers are finding the SV40, the simian virus, number 40, which means the 40th monkey virus found from the African green monkeys they used to produce the oral polio vaccine. So, I mean, all these different autoimmune diseases are linked to the same thing. I mean, it's all the body attacking itself. And as far as the measles, I want to bring out something else as well. As the measles population, in my presentation, I actually show how in 1985, 99% of the measles outbreak were in vaccinated children. And in 86, 96% in Wisconsin. In 89, 89%. So
hold that stuff right there.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is April Oakes, and she was simply pointing out that the CDC's own statistics show that we hear all this about herd immunity, but in one outbreak in one state, 98% of the children that came down with measles in that state had been vaccinated. Another state, what, 95%? What were those figures, April?
It was, well, I can give you all of them. In 1984, 58%, 85, 99% in Corpus Christi. In 1986, 96% in Wisconsin. In 88, 69%. And in 89, 89%. And then in 95, 56% were fully vaccinated in all school-age children in the United States. And they say that our unvaccinated children are putting the vaccinated children at risk, which really makes no sense to me, because if vaccinations worked, why would they worry?
That's a very, very good point. Well, let's go to Neil, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Neil. Did you have a question for our guest?
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Santa and April, for getting this information out. I wanted to actually mention something that had come to my attention recently that has me very concerned, and that is the privilege the drug companies have of distributing anesthetics to dentists and being able, by law, to hide what ingredients are being used as preservatives, which often include mercury and sulfur. I found twice in a row I went to have dental work done, and I had a terrible kidney reaction. And I asked my dentist, I said, look, Novocaine basically breaks down to PABA and DHEA and is totally harmless and it's not healthy. How come I'm having a bad reaction? And he says, it's the preservatives in it. And I said, well, what preservatives are in it? He said, well, they don't have to report it. By law, the pharmacy companies that make the drugs can change what they put in as preservatives and chemicals with the anesthetic at any time, and they don't have to notify even the doctors.
Well, I've never heard that before, but it may very well be the case. I'm very, very concerned by the additives that certainly they're putting into the vaccines and into other things, and they know that some of these are harmful. That is the great tragedy. Anything else, Neil?
Well, I wanted to ask April if she had any comments on Garth Nicholson and his supposition that pathogens that attack the myelin sheath have been introduced into society via the Gulf War syndrome.
Do you have any comment on that at all, April?
I'm not real familiar with that specifically, but I mean, definitely they're injecting our servicemen as well. And that is definitely, I mean, Gulf War syndrome victims who didn't even go to the Gulf War have Gulf War syndrome. It's definitely the vaccines that's causing it with all the different toxins in them. And I'm going to go through the ingredients in detail in a second, Stan. When you let me continue my presentation, I'll go through all of them because
okay,
it's pretty
fine.
Devastating.
Let's go to Michael quickly, and then we'll get back to the presentation. Michael, did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, actually for both of you. Are you familiar with the late Dr. Mendelsohn, the pediatrician from Chicago?
Yes. Was that the Mendelsohn who wrote a number of very provocative articles about the medical profession?
Yes, and particularly about immunizations. And I just really, I honestly don't know about this. I just wanted to ask your opinion on it. In one of his books, he wrote that the immunizations are essentially ineffective. And one of the statements he made in there was that in Europe, in the 50s, when we had the polio epidemic here, the exact same thing happened in Europe. It began at the same time, it rose at the same rate, it declined at the same time, and ended at the same time. But there was one big difference. They had outlawed all of the polio vaccines in Europe because they saw them as too dangerous. And he said the only difference was that over here, which is what the Europeans predicted, that you would have the same epidemic, but it would be additionally they would have people getting the disease from the vaccines themselves, which apparently is what happened. Is that true or not true?
It's absolutely true. As a matter of fact, Dr. Mendelsohn's one of my heroes. I have his book on our website, How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor.
And do you have the book up there in its entirety?
Oh yeah, I have the books that we raise money with for the nonprofit, and I actually quote him in my presentation as well.
You actually sell the book then?
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, we raise money with his books. He's a wonderful, wonderful doctor, and this world is not a good place without him. We'd be much better off if he was still here. He's been gone, I think, over 15 years now.
And actually, he was a member of the Board of Medicine in the state where he practiced. He was very well thought of, and yet he challenged what most of us believed, and perhaps what most of us believed was wrong. Anything else, Michael?
One more thing, and this it really follows up on that question. When I was in nurses training, one of the things that they told us, and I'm not a nurse anymore, but when we trained, they said that there's never been a case in medical history where someone received a tetanus shot at any time and then later contracted tetanus. And so it looks to me from that maybe tetanus immunizations are effective. Why would there be a contradiction there? Because the polio and all these other ones are apparently totally ineffective. Why would tetanus be effective, or is it?
Would you want to answer that, Tom?
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to, because I actually use this very often because my daughter ended up passing away from a bacterial infection, bacterial meningitis. these bacterial vaccines can't work, literally. And I've asked three of our researchers and literally dumbfounded them. They couldn't even answer me. But if you think about it, my daughter, for instance, died from bacterial meningitis, which is just bacteria getting somewhere it does not belong via a doorway. And in her case, she had a slight ear infection that allowed the bacteria to pass her blood-brain barrier, get into her cerebral spinal fluid, and inflame her meninges. And then she wasn't treated correctly. If she would have been treated correctly, she could have been saved. And then 6 months later, she could have turned around again and had a doorway that allowed the bacteria to pass her blood-brain barrier, and she could have contracted it again. So if the actual disease cannot create immunity, how can a vaccine? And they're claiming this new pneumococcal Prevnar vaccine is for bacterial meningitis.
So is that just a coincidence?
Michael, let me answer. First of all, this is not a bacterial immunization. It's a toxoid immunization. It's an immunization against the tetanus toxoid, or the toxin that's produced. And actually, of course, when I practiced medicine in Africa, we always had several people with tetanus there in the emergency, pardon me, in the intensive care unit. I never saw a case of tetanus here in the United States, although they did rarely occur. I think that if there's any vaccine that was worthwhile, it was the tetanus toxoid. It was not a true vaccine. It was a toxoid that you got an immune response to the toxoid. The problem with that was that they put the thimerosal into that, and they never should have, and that they got a lot of problems with that. And then they combined it with a pertussis that was a dangerous vaccine, and they knew it was dangerous, and they refused to change it, although they had a very, very safe one. And if they'd given the tetanus toxoid by itself, I think there was probably a basis for that. But, of course, when they began to combine it with everything else and added the mercury, then it became a danger.
So you get one good and three bad.
Right.
Okay.
I actually have a couple of quotes as well from Dr. Mendelsohn in my presentation about the tetanus vaccine, if you guys would like to hear them.
Go ahead.
He says in the People's Doctor Newsletter 7678, he stated that the number of booster shots is based on guesses and not scientific evidence. The tetanus has been progressively weakened over the years to reduce considerable reactions it used to cause. Therefore, it's a good chance that today's tetanus vaccine is about as effective as tap water. He also said there are countless references to neurological disturbances, emotional instability, and many other problems found the tetanus vaccine in scientific literature, according to the Journal of Neurology, 1997. He quotes the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology, 73, discussed how tetanus vaccine caused allergic reactions, which was well known as early as 1940 when JAMA recorded it in their journal. And he also quotes, the science is inaccurate because nobody knows the true incidence of tetanus in the U.S. and proper wound management can reduce any exposure. Improved hygiene is key to less tetanus, he quotes.
Okay, so let's go ahead and go on with your presentation there, which I so rudely interrupted.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Not a problem at all. I want to go through some of the ingredients so everyone's clear, and these are some of the ingredients that I put on a slide. Antifreeze, phenol, which is used as a disinfectant, formaldehyde, cancer-causing and used to embalm, aluminum, of course, which is associated with Alzheimer's and seizures, glycerin, which is toxic to the kidney, liver, can cause lung damage, gastrointestinal damage, and death, urine, fecal matter, lead and cadmium, sulfates, yeast proteins, antibiotics, acetone, which is used in nail polish remover, neomycin and streptomycin, and, of course, the thimerosal, which is more toxic than mercury, a preservative still used in many vaccines, not easily eliminated, and can cause severe neurological damage as well as other life-threatening autoimmune diseases. And then, of course, the vaccines are grown and strained through animal and human tissue, like monkey and dog kidney tissue, chick embryo, calf serum, human diploid cells, which is the dissected organs of aborted fetuses, pig blood, horse blood, and rabbit brain. And that's some of the many ingredients. And back to the autoimmune, I mean, you know, we're talking about fibromyalgia, lupus, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Crohn's disease, arthritis, diabetes, all these are body attacking itself diseases. So it's going to come out in one form or another if we don't detox and get, you know, take care of ourselves and stop putting these toxins into our body.
I certainly agree with you. Not only that, but we know that the vaccines have been used for other purposes. We do know that in both the Philippines and in Kenya, those two countries, why they put a abortifacient, they put actually a Corrigan atrotropin in the vaccines without the knowledge of the people there, so the women couldn't conceive and would abort. They knew exactly what they were doing. The World Health Organization did that. Nobody has been sent to prison. Nobody has been imprisoned. Nobody even dares investigate this. I'm firmly convinced that it happened because my talks with some of the people in key positions in vaccine development, and of course, if they would do that, can we really trust them with anything? We know that no matter what they do, nobody is ever punished. We do know that the original hepatitis B vaccine, experimental vaccine given to homosexuals, 1979 in San Francisco, 1978-1979, hepatitis B vaccine, 75% came down with AIDS. Why would 75% of the people who took an experimental vaccine come down with AIDS? Unless maybe there was the HIV virus was in the vaccine. The same thing you'll find in Africa. The only place you really find a very heavy involvement of the HIV in Africa is the areas where that hepatitis B vaccine was given. Of course, they've come up with a lot of other stories to throw you off the track. It was in the polio vaccine. It was in the smallpox vaccine. They're all cover stories to confuse the issue. If they would use the vaccine to disseminate a deadly disease, if they would use the vaccine to disseminate a gonadotropin to make women sterile, can we really trust them to give them to our children?
Absolutely not, and that's why everyone's got to speak up and you know, the truth here. And I want to go ahead and give some quotes also from Dr. Mendelsohn that I also have in the presentation just about pediatricians. He was a pediatrician, a renowned pediatrician for 30 years and author of several books, The Medical Heretic and then, of course, The How to Raise a Healthy Child. And he quotes also in his books, the pediatrician serves as the recruiter for the medical profession. He indoctrinates your child from birth into a lifelong dependency on medical intervention. The best way to raise a healthy child is to keep him or her away from the doctors except emergency care. Most doctors ignore the fact that the human body is a wondrous machine with the astonishing capacity to repair itself. He goes on to say the first stage of the indoctrination is the well baby visit, a cherished ritual of the pediatrician that enhances their income but does nothing constructive for your child. Well baby visits are worthless. The purpose of the pediatrician is to vaccinate your child. And then he also, in chapter 19 of his book, says the greatest threat of childhood diseases lies in the dangerous and ineffectual efforts made to prevent them through mass immunizations. So, I mean, here's a pediatrician who went through the whole, you know, medical brainwash, I call it, from the pharmaceutical companies, and, you know, thought outside the box and listened to the parents and saw what was going on. And I have no idea why he's no longer with us, but, you know, God only knows. And, you know, the way that these doctors, any doctor that goes up against the sacred cow, I mean, they're literally crucified. I mean, personal contact with every one of them. They can't get licensed. They're stripped from their funding. Dr. John Martin was stripped from even being able to test for the stealth virus, the cytomegalovirus, the monkey virus, as he was finding in children. My daughter had severe levels of it, and my daughter was very mildly affected, thank God. If you would have met Casey, she was a little girl that didn't speak only. She wasn't a severely autistic little girl. And she had severe levels of the cytomegalovirus. And if I read her results to you, it would blow your mind of all the viruses they found in her blood. But again, it's all from these vaccinations. And you know, these researchers are trying their best to prove it, but they don't have the funding. And that's the reason anyone who would like to help our organization, it is a tax write-off. We are one of the only organizations funding them. I have another private geneticist, Dr. Mark Geyer, that... He literally told me, April, if you can get me funding, I'll prove that these preservatives or this mercury and all this is not even being used as a preservative. They are being used as sterilizing agents. He said these vaccines are so contaminated they have to literally just dump the preservatives in there or the metals in there.
But the trouble is that they've actually tested and they found even with the thimerosal in them, some of them still are growing out bacteria. So they're not even a very good sterilizing agent.
Exactly. And it's an excuse they're using. But if I can get him funding, he's going to be able to prove it. And that's the whole thing. They're in desperate need for funding, all these independent researchers.
Well, then, April, let's go ahead and get your telephone number. Let's get your website out, email. How can people get in touch with your organization?
Thank you. Go slowly.
Tell us exactly what the name is, what the telephone number is. And I know that April's group is helping Dr. Wakefield and Dr. Martin and others. And it's so important that they do have the help, because these are men who are very willing to put everything on the line to try to protect the children against those people who seem so intent, like Bertrand Russell was, of using diet, injections, and injunctions to mold the minds of our children. Go ahead.
Yeah, and just so you know, we have an application that we have the researchers fill out tracking every penny we give them to make sure it's going to go in the right direction, because we know how easily manipulated people are and how money can buy almost anything in this world, but we track our, you know, the research dollars that we put in to the researchers. But our web address, you can get more information. You can see the research as well as the treatment links and everything that we offer. If you go to www.tap.info, and that's TAAP.info, and TAP is our secondary name. It stands for the Autism Autoimmunity Project. And, you know, again, we're a nonprofit charity. And feel free to give us a ring on our 800 line, which is 1-800-939-TAP, which is 8227. And we can lead you in any direction as far as exemptions, as far as treatment, as far as avoiding the vaccinations. We have all the answers for you. Again, we're moms on a mission, lions protecting our cubs. Call us whatever you want, but all I know is we're not going away until it's over.
All right, fine. And that telephone number one more time.
It's 1-800-939-TAP, TAAP, which is 8227.
All right, fine.
800 line.
All right, fine. And this is a very worthy organization. Our friend Greg Sciola is, what is he now? Is he on the board there with you?
He is. He's being voted in as our vice president. He's acting as a vice president now, and we're getting ready to vote him in probably this week. As a matter of fact, I'm relocating the office. He music to my ears yesterday. He says, April, I think it's time for TAP to merge with Crusader. So I'm moving my office up to his office Sunday, actually. So we're all coming under the same umbrella.
And they're the people we get the Bible bars from, those of you who like the Bible bars, as my wife does. He is our source for them. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course the hour flies by very, very quickly whenever we have April as a guest. And so, April, we've got about 3 minutes for you to tell our listeners all the rest of the talk that you're going to give when you come out to their community.
Well, I just continue going into the facts. I show the statistics. This is another thing. They're making it look like autism's decreasing. All the other larger autism organizations that are being pharmaceutically funded are trying to make it look like autism's decreasing. So I had our founder contact all the Department of Eds of every state and get the real numbers. And on our website, you can get the real numbers showing the increase. And I show all that on four different slides in all the different states. And then, of course, I go into all the different researchers that we fund and what their quotes are, and I go into the congressional hearings showing the conflicts of interest and, you know, making people aware of all the different things he's found out about the vaccines. And I cover all the researchers, and then I go into the diseases, how they were declining on their own long before the introduction of vaccinations. I show the charts, and I just go into, I just provide all the facts, sudden infant death, SIDS. No cause for SIDS, vaccine encephalitis, swelling of the brain, our researchers are proving. Shaken baby syndrome, they're accusing fathers for shaking their baby to death, which is vaccine death. Encephalitis.
And so they send the father to prison because they can't admit that, of course, vaccines can produce this exact picture in the brain. And actually, the shaken baby syndrome is really one of the greatest frauds of all time. Why? Because if you were to shake the baby hard enough to damage their head, why, you'd snap their neck. I mean, all you need to do is pick up a doll and try shaking it and see what happens to the neck. So, you know, this whole scam, and innocent people are in prison today simply because there's tremendous pressure not to let the American people realize the damage that vaccines can do to certain children as far as the brain and brain swelling is concerned. April, I hope if you have any real good speakers that you'll get them in touch with me or get me in touch with them, because you have an opportunity to talk to these people, and we want to give them a voice out across America on our various programs. And although we're not as large a voice as some, why, this program is probably being heard on 14 or 15 radio stations and probably 50 micro stations. So people are getting the truth that they're not getting elsewhere. I want to thank you for everything you do.
Thank you so much, Stan, for letting us speak.
Well, you just hang in there. If we can do anything to help, let us know. But please, if you've got good speakers, if you've got people that have a message, and they're reliable, we don't want to put people on that, you know, certainly are not reliable, but if they certainly speak with an air of authority and they've done their homework, fine, you get in touch with me, will you?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Stan. God bless you.
And God bless you, too. Thank you so much. Well, our guest has been April Oakes, and I hope you've enjoyed our program with us. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and if you really would like to know more about what we're talking about, we have an excellent book. It's called Evidence of Harm. It's written by David Kirby. It's the story of the thimerosal, which is so toxic that the FDA outlawed this, and working with the CDC, they outlawed it back in the late 1950s because it was too toxic to put on the skin. But it was all right to inject into our children with lethal doses, massive doses, up to 85 times the maximum allowable dose of mercury. And, of course, that was the first day of birth. And then when you begin to add up all the mercury these children are getting, why it's frightening. And they begin to realize this, and they've covered themselves. This book actually has a lot of the emails going back and forth between government officials saying, what are we going to do when the parents find out we've been lying to them? And, of course, it goes into the Simpsonwood study where they had 55 experts who got together in Georgia. I think it was in Simpsonwood, Georgia, the Simpsonwood retreat. And, of course, they got all the statistics, and they agreed that there was evidence that the mercury was toxic and damaging the brains of children. And then their reply was, well, we're just going to go ahead and keep using up the vaccines because we would recall the vaccines with the mercury in it. Why? Think of the implications of the lawsuits that there'd be when parents realize that it would damage the minds of their children. And although they've taken supposedly the mercury out of the childhood vaccines now, can we really trust them? We know that they've intentionally left it in the influenza vaccine. And this last winter you were told, why, if you loved your child, you were going to take it and get that influenza vaccine if they were 6 months old. 6 months old when the brain is developing and you're giving a massive toxic doses of mercury, why would you do something like that? Well, only if you were very evil. And if you understand there are very evil people in the world, then so much of this makes sense. The book is Evidence of Harm. You need to get it. You need to get our four-tape set on mercury. We actually have two four-tape sets on mercury, and we have a video called Without Informed Consent. You need to get the information on aspartame and NutraSweet. And, of course, we have two four-tape sets on, one four-tape set on aspartame. We have an excellent video. It's called Sweet Misery. We have Dr. Blaylock's books, Excitotoxin, The Taste That Kills, and his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, which really covers mercury and fluoride and aspartame and MSG and vaccines and so much more. And it has a chapter on each one of those, and it's a great book. We've actually probably, next to Brotherhood of Darkness, is the book we put out more copies of than anything else. That's Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And then on fluoride, if you haven't read the book, The Fluoride Deception, you need to. We have two four-tape sets on fluoride. We have my new video. It's called Fluoridated Water Toxicity. And, of course, you can get that, and you can get that with a syllabus. And it has all of the documentation, including that page, or those pages from Bertrand Russell's book, which we got permission to reproduce, where he talks about by diet, injections and injunctions will be able to change and mold the minds of the children. How are you going to mold them? Why are you going to dumb them down so they'll be docile? They knew exactly what they were doing. You'll want to get our syllabus, The Hidden Agenda. It goes right along with my talk on fluoride toxicity. We actually have another DVD on fluoride toxicity. It's called Drinking Water or Water Fluoridation. So give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Get the information. Get it to your dentist, your doctor. They're good people. They just don't know that they've been lied to. If we can convince enough people they've been lied to about this, be able to begin to understand they've been lied to about many things. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but please remember to pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you. Stand back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need reminds of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Derek Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Hi, Derek. How are you doing tonight?
Hello, Dr. Stan. I'm doing great. It's good to be here with you.
Well, Derek, of course, and his brother and a team that they have actually file articles or summaries of articles up on their webpage, which is World Affairs Brief. And I go there first thing in the morning and simply scan and see what they've been able to pull down from across the world. And articles from the India Times, from the Asia Times, from a world newswithviews.com and from the worldnetdaily.com and all of the favorite websites, rents.com. They summarize what's going on. They put it up for you. You can pull down the articles you want to and read the summaries of the rest of them. A wonderful source of information and saves a tremendous amount of time just surfing the web. So with that as the background, why, what are the latest issues you'd like to talk about tonight, Derek?
Well, we're just about to send off the latest copy of the World Affairs Brief. And so I'm looking at the recently edited version. I haven't even had a chance to send it out. We usually send it out on Friday night, and we have a whole bunch of stories that have floated to the top this week that we'd like to cover.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, the first one that we're talking about this week is actually a very old story and refers to a headline that was first published in 1977. And this was published in Rolling Stone magazine by Carl Bernstein, of which we've heard a lot about recently. He was, of course, the Washington Post reporter who was involved in the Watergate affair. And the Rolling Stone article that we're discussing here today talks about, well, it's entitled, The CIA and the Media, How the Media's Most Powerful News... How America's most powerful news media worked hand in glove with the Central Intelligence Agency, and why the Church Committee covered it up. So this is a story from long ago, but it is kind of coming up now that Mr. Bernstein is back in the news these days, and it is very important to go back and review a little bit of what was real history then and how that might have evolved, and this issue that Mr. Bernstein is bringing up might have evolved over the next several decades.
All right, we'll go ahead, because basically the theme is that the CIA plants articles in the media. It has many of our featured journalists and featured columnists on their payroll, and of course they are actually funding them to write the article the Central Intelligence Agency wants you to believe. Would that be a fair statement?
That's right.
And I don't think anything has changed at all, and those of you who heard me refer to the book Fixing Intelligence by Lieutenant General William Odom, formerly director of the NSA, the most secret of all secret intelligence agencies, in his book, Fixing Intelligence, asked in 2003, should the CIA be having journalists, their agents as journalists working for the media? I think that nothing has changed. And we're going to be back here in just a moment with Derek Skousen. I think you need to ask that. Can you have a free society when the government is controlling what the American people think? And I think the answer should be very obvious to that. And nobody in Congress or the Senate or even the President is powerful enough to stand up to the Central Intelligence Agency. Well, our guest this evening, Derek Skousen. Derek, go ahead and pick up the story.
All right. Well, let's pick up the story from how Cal Bernstein wrote about it in 1977. He says, in 1953, Joseph Alsup, then one of America's leading syndicated columnists, went to the Philippines to cover an election. He did not go because he was asked to do so by his syndicate. He did not go because he was asked to do so by the newspapers that printed his column. He went at the request of the CIA. Alsup is one of more than 400 American journalists who, in the past 25 years, has secretly carried out assignments for the Central Intelligence Agency, according to the documents on file at CIA headquarters. So there's an example that illustrates the fact that Mr. Bernstein, who is a member of the Washington Post, who leaked the Watergate issues and blew open that whole thing, is also opening up and opened up the whole issue about the fact that the CIA paid American journalists, over 400 of them, from all of the major publications in the United States to basically be operatives for the CIA.
And they still are. That's the thing. As of 2 years ago, General William Odom was concerned about that. But where is the outcry from the rest of the media? Where is the outcry from the politicians and our political leaders?
So that's the important issue to discuss here relative to this article. Is where has this organization gone since the 1950s and up through the mid 1970s, in which it was very clear that reporters and you just didn't know which of the major press reporters in the United States were members or were under the control of the CIA, were actually fairly openly being paid by the CIA. And so what has happened to that over the next 30 years? Well, let me just back up real quickly and let's just try and get a picture of what this really meant, because the CIA is obviously the Central Intelligence Agency. Even back in the 1950s, they were spies, and so all of the reporters were spying on behalf of the U.S. Now, this was at the height of the Cold War, and when political affiliations and things had a strong cultural effect, and it was much easier for the government to be more open about the involvement of reporters with the CIA. And yet, what Mr. Bernstein says in his article of 1977 is that all of that changed.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, Derek Skousen is with us this evening, and he's talking about the article that was written back in 1977. It was written by Carl Bernstein. It was talking about how the CIA had 400 columnists and newspaper writers and syndicated newspaper writers on its payroll and was paying them to create a reality. Now, this was 1977. Remember, by that time, we were out of Vietnam. Supposedly, this Cold War was still going on, but does that mean that we should be having the government control what we read in the newspapers? And so then, fast forward, I think this is where Derek is going. What has happened in the intervening 30 years since Carl Bernstein wrote that article in 1977? Go ahead, Derek.
Well, Carl Bernstein, in this article that he wrote in 1977, says that that era is over, and that the CIA no longer has journalists on the payroll. And he explains how William Colby, who was then the head of the CIA, began scaling down the program just towards the end of his time there at the agency, and that particular program, basically, started to disappear, was scaled down, and became, quote unquote, of limited importance to the agency.
Because we all know what happened to William Colby here recently, about 4 or 5 years ago, when he was writing the truth about the CIA. Why, suddenly he went for a canoe ride in the middle of a storm, and my gosh, he just died right on the spot there.
That was, yes, Colby did die under very mysterious circumstances. And it kind of looked like a freak canoeing accident. But obviously, when someone of that much understanding and background dies under mysterious circumstances, they become very mysterious indeed. But I don't want to imply that all of this is conspiracy theory. This CIA involvement with America's Press is fact. These are executives who led their corporation. These are the people who in the 70s were on the payroll of the CIA were primarily with the New York Times, CBS, Time Incorporated, the Associated Press, the United Press International, Reuters, Hearst Newspapers, Scripps Howard, Newsweek Magazine, Mutual Broadcasting System, the Miami Herald, the old Saturday Evening Post. It's all of them. Everybody was involved in this CIA activity. And so it's, when we talk about 400 reporters, I don't think I'm quite expressing the scope that the entire standard American media was on the payroll of the CIA.
Well, I think there's no question it was going on. And, of course, they were funding many of our liberal magazines and our conservative magazines. They wanted to control both sides of the political spectrum.
So, now, in the intervening years, now, Mr. Bernstein says that, during his Watergate time and his claim to fame and how the press, after the press brought down Richard Nixon, it kind of proved that the press was independent of globalist motives and globalist intentions. But I believe that is a disinformation campaign that Mr. Bernstein was a part of, that
right.
His writing of that particular expose of what happened in the past and explaining why it doesn't and can't happen again is a deliberate piece of misinformation, and that the process, while having indeed changed and being less open and obvious than it was before, is still very much alive. And perhaps it's not necessarily the CIA specifically that has the budget open for so many reporters and for the manipulation of news stories and gathering of information around the world. It is still very clear that the news process is being filtered and is being manipulated and is being controlled to an extent that is less subtle than it may have been in the 1950s and 60s, but is no less effective.
And we run into this all the time. For instance, Gary Webb, who wrote an article about the CIA and drug smuggling. After, of course, his employer, San Jose Mercury, was hounded until, was finally forced to leave there, he could never get another job working in the media in America. Why? Well, I believe it was because the CIA put pressure on all the publishers not to hire Gary Webb. And he was a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, outstanding in his coverage. But he made one mistake. He exposed the involvement of the CIA with drugs. And if they can keep a reporter from being hired, or other people from being hired, they can keep videos from being broadcast, as they did with the video of the jihad in America, Stephen Emerson's. It could not be shown. It was shown one time in 1994. It could not be shown again until after the 9/11. They must have tremendous power over every aspect of our media and very effective control over what the American people think today, not sometime in the distant past, but today.
Well, and one of the advantages that I think that we have today is that there are so many other sources of information that people who are interested in really finding what's going on can go out and find that much more readily than I think was possible before. And so there is some encouragement to that process, but it can be difficult because we have to weed out all the truth from all the noise and from all the disinformation that exists out there. And even the information itself is overwhelming when we consider all of the different news sites that are out there on the internet, all of the channels that are on satellite television, and et cetera. The control is extensive and of media, but there are sources of truth out there. It is simply a difficult task and something that we're working on here at the World Affairs Brief, and something that Radio Liberty is doing well, and many other small websites that are, I'm glad to hear, is getting more accessible for people in all corners of the globe.
And I think that really is so true. We have more access to information now and a better opportunity to get the truth out than we've ever had in the 43 years I've been involved in this battle. And World Affairs Brief is doing a great job. Go to their website, pull their things down first thing every morning, and maybe even you'll want to subscribe to their brief, which, of course, you can get directly on a weekly basis with their interpretation, Joel Skousen's interpretation of what's going on, which I always find fascinating. And, of course, we'll go ahead there, Derek.
Well, let's. We have a story in the World Affairs Brief that will be coming out this weekend that I think is a good example of the manipulation of information that happens. And you mentioned video, and so it brought it up to mind. We have the BBC just received the first video footage of the trial of Saddam Hussein, and it's unfortunately a bit reflective of what's becoming a pattern that's emerging from international war crimes trials. It reflects a little bit about Serbian strongman Slobodan Milosevic, who, when he attempted to tell the court about his collusion with the Clinton administration before the Kosovo War, all of that was censored by the court. Now, here we have Saddam Hussein, who's standing up on the witness stand and speaking about, we don't know what he's speaking about because they muted the video footage. And no one is allowed to have the video footage of Saddam Hussein and what he says and with the sound on it.
And so you can have the footage, you just can't know what it's being said, huh?
Yeah. That's exactly right.
I mean, why would they bother to release the footage and mute out the sound unless they were actively trying to conceal what Saddam Hussein is saying? Maybe he's talking about his close relationship with Donald Rumsfeld back in 1983, or his close relationship with the Bush administration between 1988 and 1990, when, of course, our ambassador encouraged him to attack Kuwait.
That's right. And so there was Saddam Hussein. He's standing up on the witness stand. I mean, he looks just like his victims looked on his own television screen and his words are censored. His arguments are unknown. And his case is being treated, as far as we can tell, as undemocratic as the judicial courts in which Saddam destroyed his own enemies. So, here we are, the court is less open than it was when Saddam was in power.
Well, you know, the trouble with the whole thing is that Saddam is an evil and wicked man. Milosevic was an evil and wicked man. Now, the trouble is that they were working very closely with agents of our government. That, of course, suggests that maybe there's some evil and wicked people working on our side as well. That doesn't excuse either one of them. They all should be brought before a fair trial, but are we ever going to see a fair trial for the people in our Central Intelligence Agency for Donald Rumsfeld, who actually was encouraging Saddam Hussein during the early 1980s, for the President George Herbert Walker Bush, whose ambassador actually encouraged Saddam Hussein to invade Kuwait, and then we use that as a justification to attack him? I mean, where do we put the responsibility? What about the George Herbert Walker Bush encouraging the Shiites in the south and the Kurds in the north to rise up against Saddam Hussein? I mean, doesn't he bear responsibility, knowing full well that Saddam would send his helicopter gunships down there, which we allowed him, of course, to do? We dominated the skies, but we let him send the helicopter gunships down and literally machine gun tens of thousands of Shia Muslims. So who's responsible? Saddam Hussein. What about the people who told him to rise up and promise to come to their aid? Well, we never talk about that. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Eric Skousen. You have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, there is organized evil in the world. And sometimes you'll find that organized evil in places that you'd never suspect. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, Derek Skousen. Derek, go ahead and pick up the story.
So we're talking about how Saddam Hussein appeared in the war crimes trials court recently. And the BBC received the footage of his testimony there, and the BBC admitted it was "quote unquote" mute, and so we don't get to hear what Saddam Hussein might have said, or what kind of information we might learn about what his perspective was in the Iraq War. And now my point of bringing this up is not to apologize for Saddam Hussein and apologize for his war crimes, but is to emphasize that the tactics that we're seeing in the appearance of a mute videotape of a trial in which the testimony is not open is reflective of the same tactics that Saddam Hussein used as under his dictatorship. Now, what does that reflect? It says to me, apparently, that the occupiers of and the government of Iraq, which is essentially the United States government, of course, is using the dictatorial tactics to the same degree. Why are we acting like dictators in this situation in terms of controlling the information and outcome of these kinds of trials?
Well, I'll ask you, why are we doing that?
Well, this reflects the need to maintain the appearance that our war with Iraq was done based on the United States taking the moral high ground, and in fact the war with Iraq has nothing to do with a moral high ground or low ground or morality at all. It has to do with a set agenda put forward by President Bush and his organization, and as the World Affairs Brief often says, under the direction of the globalist powers that be, to make this Iraq war happen as part of a globalist agenda. And Saddam Hussein was, of course, a puppet in that activity, and at this stage, he knows he was a puppet in activity, and he has nothing to lose at this point by sitting down at the trial and saying just that. And it's that kind of information that cannot be let out to the American public or to the Western world in general.
I agree with you totally. I think that there, though, is growing awareness on the part of an awful lot of Americans that somehow the people in government were not entirely forthright when they warned us we had to attack Saddam before he attacked New York.
That's right. And you know, all of this kind of goes back to the reasons why we're at war here in Iraq, and as we add those up, as we add up the reasons that the Bush administration went to war, we see that the Bush administration's reasons don't carry basis, in fact, and that the moral high ground of the American people and our beliefs in terms of protecting our interests have been lost in this Iraq war. And we are seeing that in the execution.
Hold that right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Derek, our guest this evening, Derek Schausen. He's saying that America has lost the moral high ground that we've once had, the respect of people throughout the world. Certainly after the 9/11 attack, we had the sympathy of the world, you know, for this massive attack on America and the death of almost 3,000 Americans. But, you know, we could certainly might even have justified going to war with Iraq to get Osama bin Laden, but we never tried to get Osama bin Laden. And then, and now, of course, we somehow justified going to Iraq because Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. He was a nasty guy, and we could not wait one day longer because he could attack us at any time. And anybody who really believes that has to be incredibly naive. And now, of course, the war drags on, and as Derek is saying, we've lost the moral high ground and the respect of the rest of the world. So pick up the story there, Derek.
Well, let's use another story from the World Affairs Brief this week, and to kind of illustrate that point of what's been of how the Iraq War really happened. As what's shown up in actually British headlines more than U.S. headlines recently is that another British memo, another Downing Street memo, was leaked this week regarding the discussions that Tony Blair's administration had with their intelligence agencies regarding the course of war that was being planned. Well, actually, we should say being bulldozed through the diplomatic channels by the Bush administration. So we have a second memo, and perhaps we should remind listeners of some of the stories that we talked about a month or so ago about the original Downing Street memo, where Bush, where it clearly came out that the Britons knew very early on that President Bush was planning to attack Iraq, and that he said that they were going to fix the intelligence to make the case so that policy would be implemented.
So we could justify sending the boys over to die and justify all the people who would die in this coming war. It was because we wanted to go to war with Iraq. This was planned long before the 9/11 attack.
That's right. These things are planned, and the information is manipulated. And it's important to understand that it's not just the information coming in through the CIA and going up to administrations and being sent over to Britain and France or to the United Nations and whatever that's being manipulated. That information is being manipulated, but also the information that is allowed to come out to the American people and the kind of stories that are allowed to be written is also being manipulated to ensure that that globalist policies are implemented. So that was the memo that was leaked last month, and now there is kind of a follow-up memo that has come out that talks about the discussions that Tony Blair's administration had as they reviewed the more detailed plans of the Bush administration to bring that forward. And their discussions focused on the apparent lack of reality and in scope in terms of how that plan would be executed. It didn't appear that this plan was to attack Iraq that was being bulldozed through by the Bush administration and that was going to happen no matter what. That plan, according to the British intelligence, just didn't seem to work in the long term. It had no exit strategy, and they talked about being very, very concerned that this plan wasn't considering post-war consequences and how the U.S. and Western nations were going to get out of Iraq after these apparent agendas and outward agendas were fulfilled.
So the British were much more aware of the fact that we were going into a quagmire than it would appear that our own leaders were. But are our own leaders really that naive that they never asked the question, what happens after we win the war?
Well, so if anything, you know, this memo is damaging, is not just damaging to the Bush administration, but it's also very damaging to Tony Blair's administration, because Tony Blair's administration pushed through and towed the line with the Bush administration, even though they knew and they argued and they discussed the improbabilities of the plan overall.
And of course, then an awful lot of British soldiers have died, and I imagine the British people are getting really rather furious with Tony Blair when they realize that he lied to them, aren't they?
Well, the interesting thing is that neither of these memos has really been able to generate traction with the populace in general.
Well, I don't know why people aren't concerned about the fact that the government lies to them. Especially, you know, it's not a little white lie. It's a very, very red and bloody lie. And an awful lot of American boys and over 35 women and 100,000 Iraqis have died. And well, you know, that somebody's responsible. You can't just say it happened. We'll be back in just a moment here with Derek. Okay, well, I guess this evening is Derek Skousen. Derek, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, so we're talking about the direction of the memos and how they were leaked in Britain and the U.S. And these memos are potentially very damaging to the Bush administration and to Tony Blair's administration, because they essentially admit that that they knew that the evidence was weak, that they knew that the strategy was weak in terms of going into Iraq, and they pushed that through anyway. And clearly it was part of a larger and more complex agenda that went beyond Tony Blair and the Bush administration, and it was going to happen no matter what. And this is a very explosive kind of information that has come out. It has the ability to, these are impeachable offenses when the Bush administration lies to the American people to take the American people into war. It should be more than just impeachable. But the interesting thing is that, you know, these memos, you know, the most explosive memo has been out for over a month, and yet we're really not seeing it have much traction with the American people. Yes, there's been some far left-wing groups who have been using it to create some kind of a rallying cry against the Bush administration, but in general, it just seems like the American people have been more interested in the Michael Jackson trial than just about anything else these days. And I'm not sure if that's a reflection of the media manipulation or of the reflection of America's culture.
I really think it's a reflection of the media manipulation. If they focus our attention on Michael Jackson, that's what we think about. If they focus our attention on Lacey Peterson, that's what we think about. If they focus our attention on the fact that the president lied and they talked about it day after day after day after day and showed pictures of all the crippled young men and women who come back from there, why, there would be call for impeachment. But we're not talking about it day after day after day. We're not showing those pictures. And so our reality is still Michael Jackson, and what will the new problem be? They'll always create a new problem. There'll always be some new thing to divert us away from the really important issues.
That's really true. It really has a lot to do with the priority that's placed. And that's what reflects the bias and manipulation and the propaganda that the media really is putting forward. The media says, "Oh, we're not biased. Oh, we're not putting out propaganda.
Hold
we printed
right
that
there.
Story."
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I guess it's this evening, Derek Shells. And before we go on, and I forget, Derek, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you and the World Affairs Brief, and perhaps get a free copy of the World Affairs Brief, and maybe even want to subscribe to your publication.
Sure. A great way to get a free copy of the World Affairs Brief is to call a toll-free number, and the operators there will send you a hard copy in the mail of the latest World Affairs Brief. And that toll-free number is 877-518-5888. That's 877-518-5888. And if you call that, you'll get a hard copy of what's normally an email version of the World Affairs Brief. And I am just about to send out this week's World Affairs Brief that talks about in detail the analysis of the stories that I'm reviewing here this evening. And if you're to go to worldaffairsbrief.com right away and click on the subscribe button, I can send you that in your email this evening. So there's a variety of good stories in here, and I hope we get a chance to at least mention most of them.
All right, well, do you pick up and run with the ball?
All right. Let's kind of put a few of these out on the table, and maybe we can discuss these with the help of some callers or whatever. So some of the other stories in the World Affairs Brief that we've pulled from this week, I would recommend going to Ron Paul's website at house.gov/Paul, where he talks about the hidden costs of war. And he has 9 points of the hidden costs of war that allow us to understand a little bit better that the cost of war isn't just in dollars. We also have to add lives and collateral damage. And nowadays, we don't just have to add those kinds of things. If that were all there was, then there may be some real good reasons for going to war if we're protecting liberty and other things. But nowadays, the cost of war also includes a big list of other things. And Representative Paul makes a good list there, where he talks about the cost in time, the cost in loss of truth, the cost in increased world government and loss of sovereignty, the cost of self-respect and the respect of other nations for the United States. And as these costs mount up, we realize that no war is worth those kinds of costs when we are losing our American vision. Another story, also from Ron Paul, while we're talking about what came off of his website this week, we've seen a few stories in the news media about the UN reform bill that is being placed in front of Congress. And Representative Paul wrote an excellent article explaining the real problem with the United Nations reform bill that will act to expand the power of the United Nations to a degree that is really even beyond what we might expect from the globalists, because in fact some of the specifications in this bill state that the United Nations would have the effect of making resistance to any government or any international organization an international crime. In other words, the people who are underneath dictatorships would be held as international criminals and subject to the UN forces coming in and putting down rebellions against their own dictatorships.
And I really think that in the name of reforming the United Nations, they're actually and actively working to increase its power. And until people understand that the major thrust of American foreign policy and of both the political parties, both the Democrats and the Republicans, is to massively expand world government and the power of the international elite over the lives of the people, not only in our country but throughout the world, until people understand that's what it's really all about, why they cannot understand really what's going on today. And so when we talk about, oh my goodness, we're going to cut spending for the United Nations, unless they, of course, reform, and the reforms they want are a disaster. And that's an excellent article. And that's probably on Representative Ron Paul's website as well, isn't it?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it is on www.house.gov/Paul. Another article in the World Affairs Brief this week talks about let me see, I'm paging through my notes here. There's so many articles. Let's see, we should talk about the Palestinian statement that has been embarrassing the globalists and the Israeli government. Israel is furious over a declaration this week from the Palestinian foreign minister that said that the Palestinian Authority will not keep its commitment to disarm militant terrorists like Hamas. And that was really part, a key part of the roadmap for peace and a key part of the justification that that Israel stated in terms of pulling out of Gaza and going through all of the major compromises that it has gone through. The Palestinian Authority was at least supposed to compromise and disarm some of the most egregious militant groups under their control. And now, with the Palestinian Authority backing out of that, it really is becoming a major setback to Sharon's government.
And, of course, the thing is that who is financing the Palestinians? Well, in large part, it's your tax money. We finance the Palestinians who finance the Hamas. We finance the Israelis who are fighting the Palestinians and Hamas. We finance both sides. And nobody ever asks, why are we doing that? Not only that, but we're financing the Egyptians who are preparing to go to war with Israel and building up their missile technology and their air force and the military to go to war with Israel, who are also financing. So nothing over there really makes sense if you look at it from a logical point of view.
It's exactly right. You know, you talk about financing. When you think of all the different things that the American taxpayers are really financing, it's just really quite frightening. I hate almost to compile a list, but in the news again this week, there was a major story about how the world leaders and the G8 nations, especially the U.S., are canceling more than $40 billion in foreign debt. And, of course, that's being touted as a great coup for emerging nations who are under the oppressive debt that has been given out by the IMF and the World Bank and the African Development Bank, and all of these poor countries can't pay off so many billions of dollars in debt. And yet it's critical to understand where that $1 billion came from and where all those billions have gone to. What happened to that $40 billion? Well, it was squandered and stolen by the most corrupt regimes and the biggest thieves in the third world. And now the IMF, the World Bank, and the African Development Bank, and et cetera, they don't have to take the fall for having lost all of that money by giving it to crooks. So it's these kinds of stories are coming out in the press, and they're being touted as being such generosity and have the ability of turning around these countries by forgiving their debt. And yet in reality, what's going on behind is a story of corruption and is a story of theft. And it is a story of misappropriation of funds and a loss of accountability.
In fact, it was just interesting, as I was preparing for this evening's program, I came across an article about all in very small print, about I believe it was the Senate or the House, came up with a new appropriations bill, $20 billion for foreign aid, $45 billion more for the war in Iraq. They're going to give the military now. They just gave them $80 billion within the last 3 or 4 months, and now they're going to give them another $45 billion. But if we're going to cut back on, of course, spending for things here in America, we can't do that, but $20 billion for foreign aid and another $45 billion for the war in Iraq. And you're not going to see that on the headlines of your newspapers, because we just gave them $80 billion. And, well, I'm sure the people at Halliburton are rubbing their bony hands together, as is Dick Cheney. Go ahead.
Yes, that's right. Much of that $40 billion goes to the crooks and the dictatorial leaders of those third world countries, but a lot of it also goes to the large Western-based consultants who are assigned to try and fix the problems out there, but they never get fixed. The money just flows, and it fattens the wallets of basically ex-politicos from the Western countries, like the United States especially.
Okay, well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Derek, we do have a few more minutes. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And of course, it's writing off $40 billion in debt. I mean, where does that money come from? Where did it go? And I think those are the questions we ought to ask. And then who's going to have to pick up the tab? Where's the money? Are we going to have to give more money to the World Bank and to the International Monetary Fund and the African aid agencies to make up for the $40 billion that were, they used to be able to get interest on, and now, of course, the debt's simply gone? What sort of madness is that? I mean, can you imagine going to a borrow to a bank here in the United States, and if you owe them $1 million, they just say, well, we're going to write that off because you're having difficulty repaying it. Well, something's wrong with this picture.
But only if you're a crook.
Right. Okay, well, what? Have any other good issues you'd like to talk about?
We have a good issue about the Patriot Act. This is something that has actually been bubbling up into the news recently because everyone from George Bush to Alberto Gonzalez has been defending it mightily since it is in front of the legislators to extend the sunset provisions of the Patriot Act. And I think it's very key that people understand the errors of the arguments that are being put forth about the Patriot Act. And the errors of the argument are primarily twofold. And the first one is that they say that the Patriot Act is really only about getting law enforcement agencies to work together to fight terrorism and the enemies of the United States. Well, that doesn't make any sense in the first place because law enforcement agencies should be working together anyway without the Patriot Act. And the second place is that the working together parts of the Patriot Act that were written in there aren't the portions that are under the sunset provisions about which this debate is really centered. The things that are under the sunset provisions and many other clauses which unfortunately aren't on the dock to expire at the end of the year are very egregious, and they are specifically avoided. Those sunset provisions of the Patriot Act need to go away, and the rest of the Patriot Act needs to be considered, overhauled, and also sent away. And because these provisions, everything from an excessively vague definition of what terrorism is, so that just about anybody could be arrested on terrorist charges, to the excessive allowances given to law enforcement agencies, letting them gather information on American citizens, wiretap data mine for potential problems, and doing so without the due process of law is very dangerous to the American people and the expectations that we have from law and government as set up for the last hundreds of years.
I share your concerns about the Patriot Act, and you know, it was very interesting. It was coming up for a vote, and suddenly we heard about the terrorist cell there in Lodi, and they were planning terrorist attacks on America, and this young man had gone over to Pakistan and learned how to kill Americans, and then of course, suddenly they filed the indictment against them, doesn't even mention terrorism, says they lied to the FBI. Well, there's a lot of difference between lying to the FBI and being involved in a terrorist cell in Lodi, California that's threatening America. And then suddenly the thought comes out, could it be the FBI released false information to try to get the Patriot Act passed? Because certainly what they talked about, has nothing to do with, or what they were telling the people has nothing to do with the indictment. How could that be?
That's right. And in fact, that is illustrative of the second argument that is being put forth about the Patriot Act and why the Patriot Act is okay and should be let go, and the sunset provisions should be made permanent. And it seems absurd, but the argument has been repeated over and over again, and it's that, well, these laws, while we admit that there may be some problems in the wordage, are okay because that wordage would never pass judicial muster, and they we will never be prosecuted with regard to that to these errors in law. And it's just a flawed argument from the beginning, and the fact that they would continue to put this up as saying, oh, don't worry about the Patriot Act because it'll never come down and get you, is not only a dangerous logical precedent, but it's actually a lie because, as you mentioned just now, and as we've seen in a variety of other cases, these clauses in the Patriot Act are being used as reasons to arrest and try people.
And the thing is that many of the people who are being arrested and tried have nothing to do with terrorism. In other words, they wanted this legislation through to establish a federal police force, a federal Gestapo, which they could not do, and so they used the threat of terrorism to restructure our government and establish a federal police force. And these things, if you look at the number of actually terrorist suspects and terrorist convictions in the United States over the past 4 years, why, they're just about maybe a half a dozen of them at the most, and most of them really have been, you know, really blown all out of proportion. Here, facing the terrorist threat throughout the world, and it was the lamest terrorists all throughout the world wanting to destroy America. We've not had one major attack on the United States. Maybe the terrorist threat is really not as great as we're being led to believe, but in the process, they're demanding that we give up our freedom.
Well, the terrorist threat is, whether it's greater or less, we're getting the distinct impression that the terrorist threat is being manufactured. And sometimes those manufactured threats can be real as well. And it's a dangerous precedent, it's a dangerous process that we're seeing about as the powers that be control the American mind and the American people to increase the monopoly on power of globalist trends.
And, of course, the thing that really is so disturbing to me is that we've never tried to get Osama bin Laden. And you doubt that, why we'd be glad to send you an article to the Washington Times. October 5th or 6th, back 2001, just before we went into Afghanistan, saying, well, high government officials saying, we're not going to get Osama bin Laden. We don't want to get Osama bin Laden. If we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify the war? And, of course, we have other books written by people who've talked to the special forces who were over there. They weren't allowed to get Osama bin Laden. We needed an enemy to justify continuing the war on terrorism. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go ahead, Derek. We've got about 3 minutes before I have to let you go.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, it's been good discussing all of these aspects with you here this evening. And we're definitely seeing a trend here. I think it's very useful for listeners to understand. It's been an ongoing education for me to see how clearly it is that that we can take these stories that are appearing on the internet every day, and even from mainstream news sources, even from news sources that don't have a history of supporting liberty, but tend to come from even socialist or leftist standpoints, and put all of these stories that are the real facts of what's going on in the world today, and see the trends of how power and manipulation is being extended throughout everyone's lives, and this is affecting our own personal lives here at a local level, and whether that's, you know, you're in small town California where people are being arrested for terrorism, or whether you're in the mountains of the western states, these are issues which bear on us today.
And I agree with you, and I'm very, very concerned that the war on terrorism is really not about terrorism. If it was, we would have tried to get Osama bin Laden. We would be trying to cut off the funds that are going to the people, the insurgents over in Iraq. Where is the money coming from? It's coming from Saudi Arabia. Coming from Syria. It's coming from Pakistan. It's coming from, Is any of it coming from the United States? After all, if we didn't have the insurgent action over there, could we justify staying? Why don't we cut off the funds? It takes money to finance an insurgency. Those suicide bombers are being paid substantial amounts of money that is being given to their families. So basically the question arises, why don't we try to cut off the funds to the insurgents? Wouldn't that be the most convenient way of stopping what's going on?
The world and the way the world really operates is a labyrinthian network of agendas and policies that that are just as much of a freight train as Tony Blair receiving the dictates from the Bush administration that they're going toward the war in Iraq. They saw the writing on the wall and ended up going with it. And that's happening on many different fronts at many different levels. And we see that as we gather the news from all around the world. And you can see that if you go to worldaffairsbrief.com and just scan the headlines and look for those general trends.
And look, do it every day. You'll get a tremendous amount of information. God bless you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dr.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you enjoyed our program with Derek. We try to have him on every week, several of our programs, both he and Andrew doing an excellent, excellent job. Now, if you really want to understand the foreign aid issue, how we can simply write that $40 billion of debt off, you need to get the book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, written by a man who was on the inside. He was recruited by the NSA, the most secret of our intelligence agencies, and then assigned to an international corporation. And his job was to get these countries to borrow money that they could never possibly repay, to get them into a position of indentured servitude. The book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. We have the book. We have a four-tape set. We recommend it to you, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, or the four-tape set, my interviews with John Perkins. You need to have this information. Now, I might disagree with Mr. Perkins theologically and from a spiritual point of view, but I think his facts are unchallengeable. I think he speaks from first-hand experience, and I believe what he says is absolutely true. The book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, the four-tape set, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you doubt what we said about the fact we never tried to get Osama bin Laden, why, we, of course, there's a book, we do not carry it, I wish we probably should, but it was called Missing Bin Laden. I think it was Richard Miniter's book, but we do carry the book Crude Politics by Paul Sperry, a book which Paul Sperry wrote after talking to many of the people with special forces who were sent to Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden, only they were never allowed to try to get Osama bin Laden. And if you'd like that article out of the Washington Times, we'll be glad to send it to you. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like an update on what really happened on September 11th, we have the four-tape set, 911 update, two of my interviews with Paul Thompson, who wrote the terror timeline, and then two interviews with Jimmy Walter, who spent $3 or $4 million of his own money running advertisements in New York City to try to let the people know that the government knew the attack was coming and didn't try to stop it. We have Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Cover Up. We recommend that. We have the book, The War on Freedom, and then Jim Maher's book, Inside Job. That's Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Cover Up, Jim Maher's book, Inside Job, and then the book, The War on Freedom. All excellent books. Will give you the background of the 9-1-1 attack. Our government knew it was coming and allowed it to happen, and that's unconscionable. I'm not saying George Bush knew. I don't think he did know. You never tell the president what the operation is all about. We carry the book called See No Evil by Robert Baer. In the foreword of the book, he tells about how one of his friends, a reporter, was told off the record by one of the highest officials at the CIA that when the dust clears after 9-1-1, the American people will realize that the attack on the World Trade Center was not a failure of intelligence, but a triumph. that the, when the dust clears after 9/11, the American people will realize that the attack on the World Trade Center was not a failure on the part of intelligence, but a triumph. How could it be a triumph if 3,000 Americans died? It would only be a triumph if, of course, we needed an excuse to go to war. And under those circumstances, you could justify manipulating the people and perhaps sacrificing a few lives, but for the greater good. There really are evil and wicked people in the world, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, you keep listening to our program, you'll learn more about that. The book that quotation comes from is, of course, The War on Freedom by Robert Baer, which we carry. I'm sorry, See No Evil by Robert Baer. And, of course, you can go to my website at RadioLiberty.com, and we give you many that quotation several times. Pray for America, pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until Monday, when we'll be back again, may the Lord be with you.